Facebook and Instagram. We are very active on both. So yeah, we really try and disseminate information quickly and accurately. So it's a great resource. And yeah, if you're interested in learning more about the intersection of environmental justice in our forests, as well as in other areas of the natural world, we're a great place to look if that's something that interests you.
Well, Taryn Yazdani, thank you so much for speaking with me today. I really appreciated it. And thank you so much for your hard work on this legislation.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great talking about it, and it's exciting that it's still moving forward.
Yeah. And that's our show. You can find links to all of the things that we talked about in the show notes if you're listening on your podcast, or at our website, coastrange.org. Again, please consider supporting this show by sharing an episode with a friend, following Coast Range Association on social media. All of that really helps us reach more people. My email is michael@coastrange.org. I always love hearing feedback, guest suggestions, etc. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in a couple weeks.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Apano's Voices of Change, Deepening Ties, Growing Power on Saturday, May 20th from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Great Room in Beaverton. It's an annual gathering of AAPI community to celebrate the past year, talk about future hopes, and be together. That's Apano's Voices of Change, Deepening Ties, Growing Power, on Saturday, May 20th from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Great Room, 15900 Southwest Regatta Lane, Suite 105 in Beaverton. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
From Pacifica Radio in San Francisco, this is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on a special edition of the show, we feature a speech by and an interview with Representative Rashid Tlaib, remembering the Nakba, the Palestinian catastrophe. The Honorable Congresswoman from Detroit will also honor and celebrate the work of the Middle East Children's Alliance. All this and more coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. We are proud now to present a wonderful speech given just the other day here in San Francisco by Representative Rashid Tlaib. She was in town to celebrate the work of the Middle East Children's Alliance and to remember the Nakba. And we are delighted to be able to present that speech now. And coming after the speech, stay tuned for a special Flashpoints interview with the representatives. Here we go.
Sal here. Can you keep the light up a little bit? I want to see the people, please.
Oh, thank you.
More. Masal khair.
Oh my God, a few minutes.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming. I know some people, they are on their way to come, but we need to start anyway. My name is Ziad Abbas Shamrouch in Arabic. My name is Ziad Abbas Shamrouch in English. You know, Palestinian Authority, when they wrote my name in the passport, they make this mistake and I'm stuck with it. I'm working with MACA, Middle East Children's Alliance, and I want to start to thank every one of you for coming today. It means a lot for us, for Palestine, for all the indigenous people around the world. We are here today to commemorate, remember, and to celebrate at the same time. Commemorate the Nakba, the catastrophe. And let us make it clear. Nakba means catastrophe, okay? For the people, they don't speak Arabic. And to remember what happened in 1948, and to celebrate the Palestinian resistance. the Palestinian struggle. And we can't start with this commemorating without acknowledging the land where we all of us together here today. This is the village side Yalumi for Ohlone tribe. We support the Native American rights the same way we support the Palestinian people rights and all indigenous rights for all people all over the world. I know it's Nakba, and what's going on right now, not just in Palestine, around Palestine too, more Nakabat, we say. And since since Israel war started, impact the whole Middle East, and still changing in the Arab world. And for us as a Palestinian to commemorate the Nakba, we need to acknowledge what's going on around us. We have most of the program, we will speak about Palestine. But before that, we need to, all of us together, to stand in solidarity with Yemen, with all the people of Yemen. We need to stand in solidarity with Libya, Lebanon, Iraq, Syria. And sadly, what's going on in Sudan. We, the people, we stand of these nations. I don't speak about regimes, guys, so don't misunderstand me. I speak about the people. And there is a huge connection between what's going on in these countries and what happened in 1948. Because what happened in Palestine, it wasn't a conflict. It wasn't a war. It was Zionist settler colonialism. And we deal with it in this way. Like many other nations, they faced, they liberated their land. And this is how Palestinians deal with the Zionist settler colonialism. I want to start with this because this is the beginning of our event. But as you know, in every event, we have this part where we need to acknowledge and recognize. First of all, I want to thank all the volunteers. They are with us. I can't see them. Can you the light up, please? All the volunteers around. I want to thank the theater and their staff. They are working with us today, too. And I want to thank the ASL translators. You can see them on both sides. Thank you. And I want to thank our co-sponsors, look. And there are many others. We didn't reach out, it was our mistake. But these are the groups, I'm not going to call the names. But the local organizing is very, very important for us. Yeah, we are here for about Palestine, about the Nakba. But Nakba is in San Francisco too. And there is a lot of war going on here in San Francisco and in Bay Area. And we are so lucky with all the organizations and the groups working here to protect our rights, especially I speak about the Arab and Muslim and other minorities' rights in Bay Area. And among these groups, the Arab Resource and Organizing Center, they are working very hard locally. And recently, they are focusing about the issues related to the Arab community, the Muslim community, which they are facing attacks as usual. It's not a surprise. All the time, the white supremacy, the Zionists, they try to shut us everywhere, but they failed. And this is today, it's one example. We are here together to commemorate the Nakba. The Arab Resource and Organizing Center, they did different kind of activities recently, among them the Arab Heritage Month. And I would like to invite one of the activists. I am old man, expired. So I want to invite young activists. She worked very hard with the hair group to achieve for us what we need. Come on. Sabrine.
Hello. I just met Rashida Tlaib. My icon. Anyways, we want to first thank the Middle East Children's Alliance for organizing this event and giving us the chance to say a few words. Shout out Mecca. My name is Sabrine. I'm from the Arab Resource and Organizing Center. I work as a youth organizer with AROC. And particularly, we have a program called the Arab Youth Organizing Program. It's the youth arm of AROC. I work with Arab youth and young Arab women who come from primarily immigrant backgrounds, and through AYO, we connect around our shared struggles as Arab youth and work on campaigns that advance racial and education equity. And we are very honored to be a part of this amazing event and to get to speak about some of our work very briefly, because we're not the main act. As yet mentioned, Arab youth leaders at AROC led a project this year to make a guide for Arab American Heritage Month. How many of y'all know that April is Arab American Heritage Month? We should know that. This is the first youth-led guide that highlights Arab youth in their own words, speaking about their own experiences and struggles growing up in Bay Area public schools. The youth also, alongside the guide, led a campaign to get their school districts that they go to adopt the guide. And we are very happy to say that our efforts were successful in getting their school districts to adopt the guides. Give it up for the youth. And we saw the guide and like broader work that AYO does as very important because of the, in response to attacks that on ethnic studies and critical race theory that are happening nationwide, and as an attempt to fight back against the erasure of Arab American studies. And so youth leaders frame their Arab history specifically through an ethnic studies framework because, you know, Arab Americans are no longer just footnotes in the classroom, but as an essential community that should be uplifted when we're talking about other communities of color. And within this guide, our youth, as a lot of Arab youth do, highlighted Palestine and viewed Palestine as very important when discussing Arab Americans within the classroom. And also the importance of not just discussing Palestine within an ethnic studies framework, but centering the experiences of Arab youth from Palestine, from Yemen, Syria, Iraq, Sudan, and the other countries. And in this guide, we included, also our guide is available online at ArabOrganizing.org. Forgot to mention that. But if you look at the guide, we included a part, I don't know if you guys might remember this video, it went kind of viral, but Rashida Tlaib was talking about, it was in a congressional hearing about getting MENA as a category on the census, and she asked the director of the census? I don't know. And asked him, do I look white to you? And he like hella fumbled because she's not white. She doesn't look white. And so she challenged the erasure of Arabs on the 22 census. And as we know, MENA was not a category in the 2020 census. Maybe 2030. And through our work with AYO, you know, the invisibilization and the erasure of their identity constantly gets brought up in their experiences in the classroom. And so they found this video so moving, and they included it in the guide. So when other people use this guide in the classroom, like it's, you know, sorry, I got nervous. And so this is why it's more important than ever to support Arab youth organizing and to empower Arab youth to be proud of who they are and where their families come from. And, you know, especially as we reach the 75th anniversary of the Nakba. And we're here today with the first Palestinian congressional representative, Rashida Tlaib. You know, we must defend Palestinian communities in our education systems who are getting attacked, and to honor Arab American families in the Bay Area as Arab Americans, and to honor Arab American studies and ethnic studies more broadly, which faces censorship and attacks, and in some states and cities, outright bans. Rashida Tlaib is a role model for all Arab youth and young Arab women who want to see themselves represented in politics and in the media and have the power to tell their very own stories and narratives about who they are. We are very honored to have Rashida here in our city and to be, or I'm on stage with her. And then just very lastly, AYO holds a summer institute every year. It happens in June. It's like a week-long retreat, 5 days. For Arab youth ages 14 to 22. So if you are an Arab youth ages 14 to 22, or you have Arab youth as family or friends who are ages 14 to 22, let them know about this retreat. It is held in San Francisco at the AROC office, and youth get to learn about Arab history and connect with other Arab youth and to learn about the basics of organizing and youth organizing. And you don't find spaces like this a lot in the United States. And so we're very honored to host this space every year and to connect with Arab youth across the Bay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Yasmin. Mashallah. Okay, anyway, next. She's supposed to be with us today, but she couldn't come. No, don't misunderstand me. I'm not speaking about the Palestinian woman coming from Beit Hanina or Beit Aur. Actually, she's a cocktail from Beit Rima, for Beit Hanina, Beit Aur, Michigan. She's a cocktail. Anyway, I'm not saying her name now at all. And so on this occasion, we find amazing ally to us in our work and amazing ally for Palestine. Her name the same, wherever you say it, you feel the respect to the people everywhere. Angela Davis. And Angela, she's a fighter, and she's standing very strong, not just with Palestine, with every cause in this world. She traveled to Palestine. She speaks about Palestine despite the fact of the consequences of her participation. And sometimes she faced attacks. But Angela is an amazing woman. And me, I know Angela actually when I was very young. When I heard the first time Angela Davis, I thought she's a Christian Palestinian. I didn't realize she's a Christian Palestinian, Angela Davis, because I heard about that when I was young and in prison. So they were speaking about Angela Davis. And here you can see the solidarity. And here I'm speaking about a prison. I need to remember Sheikh Adnan, Khadr Adnan, guys. 85 days he's in the hunger strike right now. And all the prisoners in Palestine. But you hear about Angela, Bobby Sands, many other international. This is the solidarity among prisoners. And Angela is one of the people that, for us as Palestine and for many other causes, is a huge supporter. She's supposed to be with us today. She couldn't. But Angela, she sent us this message to introduce Rashida. Angela.
I am deeply honored to be a part of this commemoration of 75 years of resistance to the Nakba. There are deep connections between the Black Liberation Movement in the U.S. and the Palestinian Liberation Movement. Both have a consistent history of struggle against all odds. They have each been inspired by and have been in solidarity with the other. For example, in the wake of the 1967 war, which Palestinians call the Naksa, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC, came out publicly in opposition to Zionism and in support of Palestine, thus risking political isolation and economic crisis. Other Black revolutionary organizations have followed suit right up through the current moment. Palestinians have trained Black liberation fighters, have sent tactical advice and solidarity to the demonstrations after Michael Brown's murder in Ferguson, Missouri, and have painted George Floyd's picture on walls throughout the West Bank. So I'm not representing only myself. When I join with Palestinians in Palestine and all over the world to celebrate 75 years of continuous resistance to the Israeli occupation, we commemorate the Nakba this year in the context of an Israeli government and Zionist settlers running amok with no internal or international breaks. The accelerating level of violence, repression, and land theft against Palestinians is terrifying. The Zionist goal, which they no longer bother to cover up with rhetoric about security or about two-state solutions, their goal is to completely force Palestinians out of Palestine. But their violence is fueled by panic, by the knowledge that Israel is increasingly isolated on the world stage and that Zionism is running on stolen time. There is a new generation of Palestinians. These young Palestinians are determined and creative. They are fighting to defend their communities, to end the occupation, and to secure the right of return for all Palestinians. So what does this mean for us in the solidarity movement? Colonialism does not stop until the systems of colonial violence and repression are overturned and the damage is repaired. We need our solidarity with Palestine to run deep. Therefore, we must demand and defend the right of return for all Palestinians. We should build solidarity with Palestinians fighting for their human rights and for liberation. And we must oppose all IHRA definitions of anti-Semitism, which equate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. We should defend students and educators attacked for teaching and learning and advocating for Palestinian human rights. And we must make boycott, divestment, and sanctions against apartheid Israel a core value in our communities and our organizations. It is always a pleasure to speak in support of the Middle East Children's Alliance. For more than 30 years, Mecca has provided material support for Palestinian grassroots organizations without trying to control or defang Palestinian resistance, as have so many non-governmental organizations over the years. Mecca bases its work in solidarity, not charity. It is not about controlling the Palestinian struggle. It is about creating the support to make struggle possible and sustainable. In the context of commemoration and solidarity, it is a great honor to introduce Rashida Tlaib, who has courageously played a leading role in confronting the Zionism of the U.S. government, and especially in the halls of power in Congress. Guided by the belief that everyone, not just the wealthy and privileged, deserves access to opportunity and a better quality of life, Rashida Tlaib has dedicated her life to amplifying and addressing the concerns of working families and everyday folks in Michigan and around the country. She has run some of the boldest and most visionary campaigns Michigan and the country have ever seen, making history as the first Muslim woman ever elected to the Michigan legislature, the second Muslim woman to serve in any state legislature, and one of the first two Muslim women in the U.S. Congress. Rashida was born and raised in Southwest Detroit, the proud daughter of Palestinian immigrant parents and the oldest of 14 siblings. Rashida was the first in her family to attend college and put herself through law school while working at nonprofits and social justice organizations. She made history in 2008 by becoming the first Muslim woman to serve in the Michigan legislature. While serving in Lansing, Rashida was instrumental in restoring millions of dollars for free health clinics, lead abatement programs, Meals on Wheels delivery for seniors, before and after school programs, and bilingual education. She authored laws to protect homeowners from fraudulent mortgage bankers, to stop predatory tax preparers, and to prevent scrap metal thieves from destroying communities. In 2018, Rashida was elected to represent Michigan's 12th congressional district, which includes much of the city of Detroit and several Wayne County communities. Now, on the national and international stage, she is a leader among the few progressives in Congress who openly criticize U.S. military aid to what she and major human rights groups call Israel's apartheid government. In January, she hung a Palestinian flag in her office to protest Israel's ban on Palestinian flags. She plays a major role in challenging the Zionist stranglehold of U.S. foreign policy. And as a result, she has been the target of relentless, vicious media attacks and personal threats. But Rashida is well known for her fearless approach as a congresswoman and as a community leader. Her commitment to human rights, justice, and staying rooted in the community definitely set Rashida apart as a public servant. So I ask you to please welcome Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib.
Thank you so much. Well, ahlan wa sahlan, San Francisco. Thank you so much for that wonderful, warm welcome. I want you to know, many people know a lot about what people say about me in national media or social media and all of those things. But just know that, I'm proud to be a daughter of Palestinian immigrant parents. One, my dad, who only went up to fourth grade education, came to the United States at 19 years old, was that person on the corner in the 70s who said, which watch do you want? He was that guy until he finally got on the line, an assembly line at Ford Motor Company in Downriver, Michigan. And he said, Baba, that was the first time I ever felt human dignity. And I asked him why. And he said, because I had an accent. I was a different faith. I was Palestinian, all those things. And he said, but on the line, we were all equal. We were all equal. It didn't matter that I only went up to fourth grade. Didn't matter any of those things. That's the house I grew up in, believing in that, supporting working class residents and families, that everybody has human dignity. I think I'm talking to a crowd that knows this already, but the Nakba never ended. As Peter Barnett always says, when you tell a people to forget its past, you are proposing, you're not proposing peace, you're proposing extinction. In roughly 18 months, y'all, beginning in 1948, Zionist militias in Mandatory Palestine forcibly removed over 800,000 Palestinians, erasing more than 400 villages and eliminating Palestinian sections of many mixed cities and towns. The Nakba never ended. The Israeli government did not stop. It forcibly removed close to 400,000 more Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza in 1967. Between 67 and 94, this is what we know of. We know the Israeli government took away the residency of 250,000 Palestinians who left the territories for an extended period of time. We know the Nakba never ended. And since 2006, almost 10,000 Palestinians in the West Bank and East Jerusalem have watched their homes being demolished over and over again. And that's only the ones we know of. In the 1950s, we saw 26 Palestinian families who were forced out of their homes in Yaffa and Haifa, relocated to East Jerusalem in a neighborhood called Sheikh Jarrah. Now, the Jerusalem District Court ruled six of those families would be forced out of their homes again. The Nakba never ended. To read statements by President Biden and Secretary Blinken and leaders of both parties, you'd hardly know Palestinian people even existed. There has been no or very little, more of a whisper, of the recognition of the violent, forced removal of Palestinians, home demolitions, or even of children being detained and murdered. No recognition of a sustained campaign of terror by apartheid Israel against Muslims celebrating their holiest days in one of the holiest places. No mention of Al-Aqsa desecrated by violence, or the fact that only 1,800 Christians were permitted to attend Holy Saturday to observe the final day of Christ's death, where in the past years, 10,000 would participate in Holy Saturday in Jerusalem. The Nakba never ended. Palestinian rights to nonviolent resistance have been curtailed and criminalized, as you all know. Even Americans are being directly targeted, discriminated against, barred from entering the country, and yes, some even jailed and murdered in apartheid Israel, like Omar from Wisconsin, our beloved Sharina Akla. No accountability of the killings or the violence. There are days that I feel so alone in the United States Congress as the only Palestinian American serving in the House. The dehumanization, the bullying that happens is painful, especially when the truth is not one, but three human rights organizations have stated that Israel is an apartheid government. This is what Palestinians have been telling us for decades. The Nakba never ended. Each year, our country sends billions to explicitly maintain an apartheid state and support ethnic cleansing without a second thought. I weep. I weep for all the lives lost under this unbearable status quo. No one, no matter their faith or ethnicity, should live in terror. No child should ever have to worry what will rain from the sky. My city's only crime in the eyes of apartheid Israel is that she was born Palestinian. She's automatically denied rights and human dignity. But there's the crushing dehumanization. That's the hardest part. When I see ABC says that Israelis are killed while Palestinians simply die, as if by magic, they aren't breathing anymore. I am the only Palestinian American member of Congress, and my mere existence has disrupted the status quo. I remember when I decided to wear the Palestinian thobe the day I was sworn in to the United States Congress. It was my yamma, mother in Arabic, yamma, I said yamma bidi thobik, abdi ilbis thobik. And I told her, because I'm gonna come on that floor and I'm gonna give something back to you. Her US passport says she was born in Jordan. And I, nothing bad about anybody that's Jordanian or from Jordan. But she wasn't born in Jordan. She was born in Palestine. And I was going to give that back to her. I am a reminder to colleagues that Palestinians do indeed exist, that we are human, that we have dreams of being truly free, that we are mothers, daughters, granddaughters. We are justice seekers. And the thing that doesn't seem to sink in, even though it is clear to all of us, and history shows us this, Palestinians aren't going anywhere. If we are to make good on our promise to support equal human rights for all, it is our duty to end apartheid systems that for decades have subjected Palestinians to unequal treatment under the law and led to death, generational trauma, and never-ending violence. My ancestors and family in Palestine deserve an honest discussion for their history in Congress when billions of U.S. tax dollars go unconditionally to support the continued violence and apartheid in Israel each year. The land confiscation, the forced removal, and home demolitions we see on the news today are just part of the painful history of Palestinians. Palestinians have the right to explain that the Nakba of 1948, its goal was to erase the Palestinian existence, to remove people from their homes and villages, and it really never ended. When I hear some colleagues actually think that Palestinian villages were empty, that no one lived there, I remember seeing a video of an extremist Israeli telling a Palestinian family, if I don't steal your home, someone else will. The Nakba never ended. As long as the message from Washington is that our military support for Israel is unconditional, Netanyahu's extremist, racist government will continue to expand illegal settlements, continue to demolish homes, and continue to make the prospects of a solution completely impossible. What we are telling Palestinians fighting apartheid now is the same thing we tell our Black neighbors across our country fighting police brutality. There is no form of acceptable resistance to state violence. Well, I say enough. I stand before you not only again a congressman, but I'm a proud daughter of Palestinian immigrants, a proud granddaughter of a loving Palestinian city living in the West Bank. You take that and you combine it with the fact that I was raised in one of the most beautiful Blackest city in the country, a city where movements for civil rights and social justice is our birth. You can feel it at every corner. Detroit taught me, especially the Black mothers up and down the block, if you always speak truth of power, you can always see justice. So I cannot stand by when injustice exists, where the truth is completely altered. If there is one thing Detroit instilled in this Palestinian girl from Southwest Detroit, is you always, always do not stand on the sidelines. I can tell you, even when I literally can feel myself shaking, getting up, it is always, always the activist and these amazing, amazing women in Detroit who will bump me and say, we can't hear you. So this coming month, I'm reintroducing a resolution recognizing Nakba. So I can say it loud and clear. The Nakba happened in 1948 and it never ended. So I want to thank all of you because I know how courageous you all are in speaking truth to power consistently about the Palestinian liberation movement, even just our fight to humanize Palestinians here, even at home, and of course in Gaza and Palestine, even among Palestinian citizens of Israel right now struggling every single day. All of them, I know, would want to thank you. I told a story today and someone seemed to be shocked by this, but you know, my cousin Shireen told me, you know, she called me and after I got elected and she said, you know, we all can't believe you won. We can't believe you're going to be in Congress. And I was like, me too, you know? And I'm like, you know, I only won by 899 votes the first time. I mean, of course I won a lot more the second time. But as that moment of joy, of course, my cousin Shadi makes me cry because she says, you don't get it. We thought Americans wanted us all dead too. And she said, when I got elected, she's like, oh, there's something different. I said, yeah, the majority of people that elected me did not share my faith or ethnicity. And they lovingly asked me how my grandmother is doing. That's the community that raised me. And that's the community that comes with me every single day I walk on the United States House floor. And I always end with this, Ashen Eksitti, I'm here because of you. Thank you.
Canada. Hello? Can you turn the light on, please? Lights on. Yeah, we are not done yet, by the way. Yeah, okay. Do you need a chair? I know you are very tired. Okay. And thank you so much. We have a few questions for Rashida. It's not easy to open to the public, so we asked and we got a few questions. And one of the main questions is about the last time you visited Palestine and any updates, if you are thinking, we remember the whole story in the past.
So I did try about 4 times in a 2-year period. Of course, with the pandemic, there was a bit of obviously challenges, but some of my colleagues are attempting to see if there's an opportunity for me to go. Of course, I tell them every single day, you know, take me on any trip. I promise to behave. but I think they know not to believe that. But I do want people to know I'm trying incredibly hard to get there. But I just, it's important, Ziad, for people to know this happens to Palestinians every single day. So many people, because we don't have a Palestine office in Washington, D.C. anymore, I'm like the ad hoc office now. People call me, and of course, I always encourage them, please call your member too, or I can send the message to them that they got denied entry into Israel or Palestine. And so that is something that I continue to tell folks we need to document, because it is direct discrimination against Americans. And again, it's not only Palestinians, it's a number of folks that again are denied entry almost every single day from entering Israel and then of course the occupied territory. So even members of Congress right now are incredibly concerned, including Congressman Mark Pocan and others, about lack of access to even Gaza. They want to be able to go there and do their job as doing oversight, since we do, you know, talk about funding opportunities there. And so I know we're going to continue welcoming any invitation if people want to take me and let's see if we can do it. I'm all for going there and trying, but I would like to go with other colleagues, and that's more for the safety, but also the fact that would like to enter as a United States Congresswoman doing my job. We send a significant amount of money there, and I want to be able to go there as that, not what they want, which is for me to come there with little or no freedom of movement.
Thank you. By the way, thank you, Russia. Russia insists she wants you to sit down. You know Russia. By the way, I would like to thank Russia. She's the one all the time coordinate this work to make it happen. Thank you, Russia. Okay, the second question, actually, the question is maybe in many people's minds, as a Palestinian working in the Congress with all the kind of support goes to Israel. And you face these people every day, and you see them sometime, even they go to Israel, they come back. Even I think 2 days ago, they were a huge congratulation from U.S. government to Israel. I know we commemorate the Nakba today, but they celebrate on the other side. And I don't know how they celebrate, actually, because they impose curfew, they celebrate behind walls, fences, etc. in Israel. So how you handle it? How you deal with it in every day, like for you?
I know a lot of people ask me. Yeah, a lot of people ask me that question. I mean, look, I think there's a number of my colleagues that, you know, they vote for the defense budget. I don't, or they're going to support, you know, certain, you know, corporate subsidies or things like that. But I try my best to find, you know, if there's opportunities to work together, especially on climate, on, you know, I'm trying to work to make water a human right in our country and make sure it's clean and affordable. All of those things is that sometimes I am able to work with colleagues that sometimes, unfortunately, are, you know, I do not agree, very strongly disagree with them on the position of, you know, the unconditional aid to Israel, especially with the continued recognition by human rights organization that it's a, you know, an apartheid government. And we continue to get more and more information about the continued violence and the extremism. I, you know, remind my colleagues that many of the people got elected currently, including extremist government of Netanyahu's, under Netanyahu's leadership, is that many of them ran with these ads that said, vote for me, I'll kill more Palestinians. No, vote for me, I want another Nakba. Or vote, no, it literally, that was their campaign ads. I mean, we have this alone here in the United States with some, colleagues of mine, maybe they're promoting, you know, certain, you know, some actually have photos of assault weapons and things like that, which is very problematic. I mean, I don't know if you compare it with, but I mean, the fact is there's extremist kind of way of people campaigning. And one of the things that I'm continuing to try to show my colleagues is that, you know, especially those that consider themselves progressive, that this is not a government that you would consider progressive. And so, you know, I'm trying my best to develop those relationships so that they can truly hear me. I've been there 5 years. I can tell you, without naming names, that I've had really thoughtful, meaningful conversations with colleagues. And I think it actually is changing their perspective. Probably not as quick as everybody here would like, but I do feel like I'm there. And I do get asked if what occupation means. Because I think we live, you know, not understanding that many of my colleagues may have ran on, you know, climate or ran on healthcare or ran on all these other issues, that this issue wasn't at the forefront when they ran. And many of them were unexpected winners in their campaign. Again, I came with the largest incoming class in Congress. And I don't think, I really truly believe, again, they're seeking information. And so if you have a new member, don't assume. I think you should always reach out no matter what.
Yeah, I want to go back. Can we put the light on, please? I hate dark. Anyway, now we can see we have many Palestinian people. They are very active these days, coming back. And I'm sure you are with the some of the Arab generations. They move to United States, where some families, they come here, they want to survive. Sometimes they try to pull out from politics. You know how it is.
My mom.
Yeah, exactly. My mom, too, she tried. But, and we have many organizers, and we can see, like, sometimes with some families here, they face this kind of identity crisis. They are living in the United States. They are, in your experience, you experienced that. You are a sister of 14, 13, right? You have children yourself. What's your advice? What do you tell them?
I don't know. Are you talking about, like, some people don't recognize their roots? Is
it? It's not that I doesn't recognize the roots as much when it comes to the assimilation.
Oh.
And well, I mean, sometime...
that's, I don't know. I think that's on us as parents. But I can tell you, I know what you sort of mean. But like my mom is the type, just because, I mean, she was born in 55. So imagine she went through that time. She watched my grandfather get shot because he didn't want to leave his land, all of those things. And so she comes from that school of thought. She votes and she's like, that's it. She's always like, why are you the one that makes me, I have so many kids and you're the only one that causes trouble. Like, she always says that. No, really, she's always saying that. Like, yeah, alhamdulillah, she's not on Twitter. But I can tell you, yeah, she's not. That was a form of therapy for quite a while. I've stopped using it as much. But I do, you know, I do know there's a generational thing about being too out there politically. And I know, like, I've talked to young, especially women in our community, really diverse women, it could be Latino or Arab or whatever. And, you know, they say, my mom. And I said, yeah, dude, I'm a mom. They're trying to protect us, right? But they don't have to know that you're going to go to the Black Lives Matter protest. You know, like, you could do these things. Like, I don't go tell my mom I'm about to go do civil disobedience and then pray to God she'll never know. But I mean, those are things that are. I honestly feel like, you know, not every child or every person that comes, is going to gravitate towards, you know, justice work or towards even just cult, you know, things that desire and culture or whatever. I mean, I think sometimes it just organically happens, but you got to create opportunities for it. So I don't know, you know, I've heard, people complaining to me. Like, one time I was with a colleague who's also Palestinian, and his dad came up to me and I spoke to him in Arabic, and he goes like this to his son. She speaks Arabic and you don't speak Arabic. And I looked at him, I said, Ammo, that's your fault. I said, Uncle, it's your fault. I was like, why are you blaming your son, dude? Like, you're solely, like, he was a refugee from Palestine. And I'm like, he's like looking at his son, like, why didn't he? I was looking at him like, what? You should have taught him or something. Yeah.
But I like that when you said refugees, you turned toward me.
You made it very clear. But yeah, it creates opportunities. I've seen people late in their years, Ziad, get so much attached, and they find themselves in their roots, and also they feel liberated after that, actually.
Thanks. And now I want to go back to the Democratic Party. It's okay?
Yeah, you can talk about both parties if you want.
I know what you are doing to the other party, but I can speak about the Democratic Party.
Yeah, well, they're the you same know, on this issue.
Yeah, yeah. I will share a few answers already. Yeah, now when it comes to what's going on in Palestine, and I know I spoke in the, one of my introductions, it's like we can see we count a lot on the new generation in Palestine, and actually there is a certain kind, we are very optimistic. And when it comes to the American policy, and we don't see that much changing in the American policy toward what's going on with Palestine, but the solidarity movement, it's expanding, and you are coming from there. You were working, organizing in the ground. What do you think, your thoughts about how this, what we need to do, like as a solidarity movement in the future to keep this kind of work?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the we call it intersectionality, or the work that we do of showing up for each other, no matter who's being oppressed. I always tell people there's no hierarchy, who gets hated the most. And so I know when people say the politics, I just so we differentiate, okay? There's Congress, the Senate, and the House. And by the way, there's more Mao members of Congress, new members actually now, that have stood up, signed, you know, Congressman Jamal Bowman's letter, really calling out against the violence. And really, you know, many people actually thought I wrote the letter. I was like, no, he did it on his own. By the way, Congressman Jamal Bowman visited my grandmother, and when he was done in the West, yep, and when he was done, he was met with a checkpoint right in front of her house. So he experienced, yes, and he had to go all the way around. Yeah. And but I mean, sometimes it takes people to see it and experience it, but also, you know, Jamal, you know, Dele Ramirez from Illinois, Summer Lee from Pittsburgh. I mean, these are some new members that came in even after me, and they're courageously standing up and humanizing Palestinians by saying they deserve human rights. And so we got to enhance and support that more and more than ever. So it's a lot more than just the members you might, you know, assume myself and Alex and Ilhan and Ayana, but it's growing in numbers. And, you know, we have amazing people like Mark Pocan and Pramila and a lot of other folks that have been doing this work. Betty McCollum is incredibly passionate about, you know, really fighting against children being targeted and detained and so forth, and really speaks so passionately about Palestinian children. So we have some really great, I mean, they have some great allies in Congress. But this is important, Ziad, because the things are changing. They're changing outside of Congress. And I don't think people realize, you know, this is something Detroit taught me, and Grace Lee Boggs used to say this all the time. Grace Lee Boggs said transformative change doesn't happen with who's in Congress or who's in the White House. It happens when the streets organize and demand it. We saw it with the civil rights movement, and we saw it with organizing labor unions. Those, when you see that kind of movement, it does finally reach the halls of Congress. And so what I've seen, you know, I don't believe in every polling, but polling data is coming out, and more Americans are seeing a different light, or things that Palestinians have been talking about for years, in expressing problematic issues in regards to the current government of Israel. So I think things are changing outside of Congress, and that's because of the work that happens on the ground. I know you get told that, but I don't think you realize how incredibly effective that is. Because, Ziad, I never, ever thought the House was going to take on the George Floyd Justice and Policing, because the marches wouldn't stop. And when they took it up, and they moved it fast, when it came up, I was like, oh, my God, they're going to take out their immunity. I was like, really? And I didn't believe it. And then it came out, and we voted it with bipartisan support. And it's because people march for days. They just wouldn't stop. And it happened. I know a lot of people are like, you know, of course, I think I'm on a different timeline than many of my colleagues. But even the gun crisis, I remember that moment where they even moved the background check stuff, the red flag one. I mean, as it came up, of course, I'm like, this is it. We got to do more. But I never thought that even remotely we'd got a close of any movement on that issue. And I really think it's because the youth would not stop. They were literally, you know, on the members, showing up to the town halls, doing all that work. I think we need to, you know, I know a lot of people still do it, but we need to be there doing that work in the communities and showing up in that way. That's when I think you can start seeing it, you know, in Congress and in the White House, is when we again push and push and push. I truly believe the new members coming in have already experienced that and worked an alliance with so many of the grassroots organizations and see that connection, because I think, you know, I think, like, for me, again, in Detroit, we have Blacks for Palestine. We have all, I mean, we have a number of folks that have been full of steam more than I have. And so it's kind of organically happening, and I think that's changing the narrative.
With that note, I know it's 8 o'clock, and I would like to thank Rashida. By the way, why they called you Rashida, your family?
So my Siti and my dad, Allah Rahman Saf, so Yaba, Siti, and Ammi, and Amti, and probably, I don't remember what year it was, but they went to Nicaragua where her sister was, and my dad's aunt helped raise him, and so he named me after her. But she was always in Nicaragua, I believe. But yeah, I was named after her. By the way, when you go door to door, they're like, Rashida. That's the way my residents are trying to figure out who I am or what I am. So they're like, Rashida, oh, what is that? And I was like, it means wise.
Yes, it means wise. Yeah, this is why I asked, because I want to say we are lucky as a community. I'm not speaking just about Palestine and all the social justice community, to have leaders like Rashida. It's an honor to be with you. I'm speaking on behalf of everyone, on behalf of MACA, Middle Eastern Alliance, and behalf of everyone. Yeah, this is something like we will continue working on that. And when you have leadership like this, since your mom, grandma, your mom, does your mom have Facebook? Doesn't have Twitter. Does she
no,
have
Facebook? She has Facebook. Yeah. She calls it textbook, but it's
follow
Facebook.
Her, guys. Yeah, a textbook. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
My you mom can is, follow her, guys.
My mom is great. She's got a personality.
And if you follow her, you can get more information about Rashida, the other kind of information. And yeah, I would like to thank you. Thank you, Rashida, for coming tonight. And thank you, everyone. Thank you. And keep continue. We have more events to come. And thank you, thank you, thank you so much. Thank you, Russia. Thank you, everyone. And we hope to see you soon. Go to our website and you can learn about our activities. Thank you. Have a good night.
Do you ever miss back home? I miss people, but I don't miss places.
Prepare for takeoff, touchdown, Ben Gurion. Strict search, make sure nobody enter with bombs. Blue, white flag for this birthright, Toramon. Never mention three villages that the airport is on. Recent history buried, but it speaks to the sand. All Jews, law of return, I don't seem to understand. A land without a people, for people without a land. But I see a man standing with a key and a deed in his hand. Museum of the Holocaust, walking outside in the distance, all ghosts throwing a Molotov. Houses burned with kerosene, mass graves, couldn't bear the scene. It wasn't a pogrom, it was the ruins of Deir Yassin. Shopping at the Kenyon Malha, built it on the back of the town Al Malha. Wishing we could call its name, appalled by the change. And now a marvel of chains is all that remains. My evil misses people, not places. Has she seen the town from names of Arabic to Hebrew? Then sticking in between a hole in the bricks, I'm feeling more than melancholy. This used to be the Moroccan quarter until we stopped them short. And now they grandkids is the ones that stole my rocks and borders. I ain't wanna play and I don't pray often, so I'm A-walling. While you making native sons feel like a stranger in their homeland, like James Baldwin. This ain't about a Quran or a synagogue or mosque or Torah. Colonizers rake it into acres and dunhams, erasing the culture when they change hyper to hyper. Change Yaffa to Yafo, the old city left to haunt. Homer's pronounced hummus. Restaurant. Next hit the discotheque. Yes, we on a list of guests. Palestinians can't get in. It's blatant disrespect. Cops stop them for speaking their languages. It's dangerous to repeat it when we're history. We disconnect. My email misses people, not places. Has she seen the town with names of Arabic to Hebrew?
This is Dennis Bernstein, and this is Flashpoints, and we have a very special guest. Can I ask you to introduce yourself and tell us just what you do for a living?
Well, I'm Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib. I represent the 12th Congressional District in Michigan.
Well, thank you for coming here to the Bay Area, speaking beautifully tonight for the Mecca, the Middle East Children's Alliance, which we celebrate and love and appreciate. So thank you for that. You gave a beautiful speech. I just have a couple of questions. How do you deal with the fact that the corporate press has essentially censored the story of Palestine and the nature of occupation and the expanding ethnic cleansing? You know, a Palestinian journalist gets gunned down. It doesn't seem to make the news for very long. Last night, they were mourning the arrest of a Wall Street Journal reporter who gets the front line. How do you tell a story that has so much suffering when there's so much censorship around it? How do you deal with the censorship?
I mean, I can tell you, I mean, I see it with our indigenous communities. I mean, we have so many women that continue to disappear with no, you know, justice for them and no, you know, really time that's spent on that. I see it with our immigrant neighbors consistently of the hardship of our broken immigration system. I mean, I see it with a lot of our communities of color that continue to be dehumanized by basically not speaking to them, right? That's the one thing that always takes me aback. Like, I just don't understand. If you're going to talk about Black Lives Matter movement, talk about somebody that's been impacted by state-funded violence. If you're going to talk about, you know, immigrant rights, talk about a person that's a dreamer or DACA. If you're going to talk about the struggle in Palestine among the Palestinian people, talk to a Palestinian. So I always encourage people. I mean, I'm always taken aback. Again, even when I was in Minnesota, I remember, you know, as the indigenous community was continuing to say how so many of the women in the tribe just continue to disappear, is pipes, you know, the pipeline folks come in and out and nobody seems to care. No one's paying attention to communities of color. And I think, you know, especially with the Palestinian cause, is very interconnected for the fact that I just don't think people really care enough about diverse communities like ours that really continue to be oppressed in all different ways.
But don't you think that, I mean, we've heard the phrase silence equals death. Don't you think that the press has a responsibility for sustaining an ethnic cleansing if they refuse to report on it? Don't they become a player in what many feel is an expanding ethnic cleansing?
I mean, I guess maybe because I'm the only Palestinian American serving in Congress right now, I've actually seen more folks, you know, reaching out to me, asking me questions, not only about the NECBA resolution I'm going to do, but we just did an interview with Al Jazeera, who is going to do a specific focus on the one-year anniversary of the murder of Shireen Abu Akleh, and talking about, has that changed the perspective of getting more members of Congress to talk about human rights for Palestinians and so forth. So I see the shift. I guess maybe a lot of other people don't, of at least seeing, I think, maybe networks or outlets that reflect, you know, communities like ours. So I see it with many of our young people creating their own access by podcasts and things like that to bring a voice. But even my climate justice seekers tell me all the time, nobody cares that the earth is burning. Nobody talks about it. It's not on the headlines. So it's not just on Palestine. I really think there is a system out there that doesn't focus on some of the hardship and pain that many of our communities are facing right now.
I don't want to belabor the point, but here we are, you're in California. We have a governor who prides himself on being a progressive, a liberal, but he has rejected on several occasions a very popular ethnic studies program. Wouldn't you think a step towards understanding was to create a learning program within the high schools to talk about the history of Palestine? Why do you suppose the governor, who's so powerful and so progressive, would be vetoing a program like that?
Yeah, I don't know. It's the first I'm hearing about it. I if I ever get to meet him, I'll ask him.
Please do. Because, yeah, I mean, it really, it was about to pass, and then there was this letter, you have to say, from over 50 Jewish organizations, some of them more right-wing than others. The letter arrived on the governor's desk. Everybody was expecting him to sign. Here comes the letter and then no signature. So I this is important. And this is a guy who's thinking about running for president.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know, but I can tell you, nothing's going to stop the Palestinian people from speaking their truth and finding ways to tell their stories. Today was very powerful to hear that woman through a camera on the cell phone to see the village she grew up in and say, when can I see it in person? I really want to see it in person. Yes. It was powerful. Yes. So we're going to tell our stories any way we can, even if the governor vetoes it.
Thank you for taking this time for us. Really appreciate speaking with you. No,
thank you. Really
Take
appreciate
care.
It.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That wraps it up for another episode of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Miguel Gavilan Molina and Kevin Pina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. For previous episodes, go to kpfa.org or flashpoints.net. For questions or comments, email dennis@kpfa.org. Thank you for listening.
You are tuned to KBOO, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Once a Braided River on Tuesday, May 16th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Cinema 21 in Portland. Once a Braided River is a documentary film by Barbara Bernstein. The film tells the story of the Willamette River before it was transformed into a Superfund site. The documentary features community groups and activists working to replace the zone and explores their vision to reclaim this stretch of river as a place where people and wildlife can thrive. Again, that's Once a Braided River on Tuesday, May 16th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Cinema 21, 616 Northwest 21st Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Saddle up and ride with country music in your head from 6 till 9 every